associations will often determine. Because often people are experiencing the same problem. It's like sometimes we see devotees have, I think the worst, scenario we can think of in Krishna consciousness, so to speak, your guru falls. And so someone has a guru who falls and they lose total faith in the process. In the guru, in the society, and even in Krishna. Someone else has the same experience, but it has later the opposite effect. That before they were being somewhat frivolous in their devotion, rather nonchalant, inattentive, and now they have become very conscientious, and they're looking closer at themselves, closer at others, they're being more careful about how they associate, they're studying the scriptures more, they're looking and understanding our legacy, our heritage, so many things. And so they have literally blossomed in some ways. Same basic experience. It has a lot to do, of course, with karma, with consciousness. And it has tremendous to do with Krishna responding in our hearts based on what is really going on in our minds and, of course, in our hearts. So we want to share. Today we'll spend the first half with the sharing, and then we'll take questions and answers. Tomorrow we will specifically look at states of consciousness, and we'll look at them from the Vedic paradigm as well as from the Western, that there are different altered states that the mind experiences. And each state has certain things that, as happening, certain levels where too much input at that stage produces certain types of inauspicious results, and a lack of stimulation at that stage produces certain types of results. Proper stimulation produces certain, and I think this will shed more light to us about the many things about the process, and about perhaps some things that we're going through, or it can help us to be more careful, to do the right things in the right way. So maybe I'll open up first, and I'll tell a little story. I can tell you a million stories about feeling abandoned sometimes, but I'll give you one, and then we'll hear from some of yourselves. As a brahmachari, I was extremely outrageous. I'm outrageous now, but I was really outrageous as a brahmachari. Hopefully nobody knew me in those days. I was fanatical, I guess you would say. I'd rise in the morning at 12 o'clock, at nighttime, 12:30 in the middle of the night. I'd chant 42 rounds for many, many years. And even now I do. I eat once a day. But then I was eating once a day. And for some years I was just taking yogurt and dates. And then for about 7 or 8 years I was just taking 2 apples, 2 bananas, carrots, etc. And that was once a day, a meal, etc. And I would chant so loud that people 3 blocks away would hear. So now imagine what this is like, and you are traveling with a few devotees, and your association is basically just each other. For many years, I was in the library party, and we would travel so many countries, so many places where there were no temples. Most of the time, we were just on the road. And so we had, you know, a combination of 5 or 6 different parties. We would rotate 2 or 3 men in each party. So, you know, those who've done Sankirtana, you're traveling like that for advanced types of activities or whatever, you know that how important it is to have good quality association with the devotees, you know, who you're with. Otherwise, life becomes hellish. You know, you go weeks and weeks without coming to a temple. And you can see what happens to sometimes the Sankirtan parties, you know, somehow the chemistry of people just not quite working. And they rush back. When they come back, they're ready to, of course, change parties and not go back out with that person. So that was kind of my situation. Now, on one side, I was trained up most of the devotees on the party, myself and another devotee, Mahabodhi. But I think maybe more myself more. And at the same time, as I was training up the devotees, after a short while, nobody wanted to go out with me. And I was just thinking, well, Prabhupada said this work is very important. He had written some letters, one of the most important services. And Prabhupada was encouraging everyone. But he was particularly happy about the professors getting his books. We were doing what's called standing orders. So we were not only selling books to the professors to use in sometimes their coursework or in their research, but we'd get people to buy the present books and to sign a contract that every new book that comes out that they would receive it and just automatically pay. So it's like an author's dream. That not only are people buying your books, but any book that you write, there's people already waiting to get it, and they've paid, or their financial arrangements, contract arrangements are there. And what they say of scholars, libraries, museums, honoring such a contract. So I didn't really realize how much I was so obnoxious, you know? When we're into ourselves, went to our moksha consciousness, our austerities, or just egocentricity, we often do not see how others see us or hear what is really going on. And that's why open communication is always most important in Vaishnava association. Because Krishna will arrange to allow us to be helped if we have the humility and the desire. Krishna will facilitate in so many ways. But I was having an improper conception about Krishna consciousness. So I was just thinking, well, my party is always winning. We always, because we had a lot of competition those days. And so we were distributing the largest number of books, and usually we would distribute as much as the other parties altogether, the other three or four parties. So therefore, there was a sense of pride, a sense of accomplishment that caused the perception to be clouded. And so, one year we came to Mayapur, and all the parties had come together. We had been away from each other for 2 or 3 months in our different fields of activity. And so at some point, we all came together, the Mayapur Festival, and at that time, Setsu Maharaj was overseeing the party. And there was a meeting. And in that meeting, every single member of the library party complained. And half of them were wanting to resign. And I was the reason for it. Now imagine what it was like. You're all day working, you know, you get up in the morning, and there's somebody who's been up already 3 hours, who kept you up half the night, because they're chanting loud. Then when you get up, he's reading with a sense of arrogance, like, why are you sleeping so long? And then it's time to eat breakfast, he's not eating, it's time to take lunch, he's not taking, he works like an ass, and at the end of the day, he eats. And so to have to go day to day with someone like that, when you're on the campus, and you're dealing with karmis all day long, and then basically you're pretty much by yourself, because there was not so much real bonding quality association in that sense. So what had happened then is half the devotees wanted to resign, and no one wanted to go out with me anymore, even those who were going to stay on. And so I was like totally devastated. I was thinking, my God, I'm working so hard, I'm being so austere, I'm distributing so many books, and look what's happened. Here are these devotees who are so dear to Srila Prabhupada that I have offended them to such an extent, and I was like totally oblivious to what was going on. I mean, it was so obvious, but I was so covered, I wasn't aware. And I felt like so depressed. You know, we've all had those experiences when you're like really depressed, you can't sleep, you can't eat. I mean, it's like you're stuck in some area that you just can't get out of, you know. Everything just seems gloomy, gray. Everything just seems disappointing. And so I was like that. And I was literally thinking about maybe walking into the Ganga, huh? But not coming out. So it was going through my mind a couple of times, like that. And I was thinking like that. So, Prabhupada was having some pandals, and he had a program at State at One Life Member's Home. So I was walking around with my head, you know, in my chest, you know, feeling very depressed and not talking to anybody, not even looking at anybody practically. But Hari Sari was Prabhupada's servant. And he had to do something. I don't know what it was. But I was just walking. The devotees were getting ready to go out somewhere, and I was so depressed, I was just kind of hanging around, not knowing what to do. So I just happened to walk by Prabhupada's room. So Hari Sari called me, and he says, I need you to watch Srila Prabhupada to be a servant for a while, because I have to. There's an emergency and I have to go. So I was thinking, oh my God, I'm so miserable, and I had to come before my guru looking so miserable, and I couldn't, you know, when you get really depressed, you can't fake it. I couldn't change my energy, my consciousness. But he left before I had a chance to tell him no. And so I was thinking, what to do? Run away, or go in? Then I thought I better go in. Tried to find somebody else around for a minute or two, but I couldn't. So then, and just around that time, Prabhupada rang his bell. Harisarya told me when Prabhupada rings, you come in. So I looked to see if Harisarya may have been coming. He wasn't. Nobody was around. So then I ran into Prabhupada's room, feeling really miserable. And I just made four dandabats. And the room was kind of small. And so when I held my head up, Prabhupada's foot was in my face, almost on my forehead. And I was wondering, you know, what's going on? I had all kind of mixed feelings because my conscience was in such a strange space. And then, I don't know whether he was going to kick me or... No. He was showing me the foot before he gave me the kick. I didn't know, you know. Guru knows the mind of the disciple. He's going, on top of it, my guru's going to give me a damn kick. Oh, my God. So, Prabhupada had some sort of accident. It was either the time he had the accident in Mauritius and Nairobi in the car, or a time he had fallen out of the bed. I don't know exactly which one. But he had bruised the insole of his foot and the ankle and part of the foreleg. And so on his table, he had something that looked like neem leaves and some other type of herbs. And he just said, he pointed toward it, the neem, and he told me to put it on his foot. So his leg was over the table as I made dandabats, the leg was coming. And so he just wanted me to take the neem and put it on his foot. Now imagine, I'm depressed like anything, shaking, thinking Guru's going to kick me, and my mind and my body was just totally uncoordinated. And I'd only had a few chances, times that I had been, you know, Prabhupada's servant up to that point. So I'm just totally bewildered, all thumbs. And so I took the neem leaf and I tried to put it on Prabhupada's foot. But somehow I was so uncoordinated, I was shaking and so nervous, I just dropped it on his silk dhoti. You know how neem stains, right? And then I tried to take it some more and tried to rub it on. A little bit got on, the other part dropped on the other part of his dhoti. But Prabhupada was looking at me like nothing had happened. And then he told me to put on his elbow. And so I took again, I tried to rub on his elbow, and I spilled on the table and I spilled on his dhoti. And then I was about to just run out and really go jump into the Ganga. But everything I do, I do the wrong thing. And all of a sudden, there was an interesting transmission. And Prabhupada was just smiling. And in the heart and the mind, I understood that Prabhupada was letting me know, yes, you know, you're trying to serve me, but you're doing a lot of things in the wrong way with good intention. And that Prabhupada was actually blessing me in the sense of, you know, letting me know, don't commit suicide, but just do the things in the right way in your service. And so after I had tried the last time, and it dropped, and he was smiling, and I got that, you know, that interesting realization. And so where I was feeling, you know, sort of abandoned, that here I'm trying hard to serve Prabhupada, and I'm working with these devotees, and I'm just a failure, and you know, I tried my best. Maybe I should just give up because, again, ego was coming in another way. Of course, ego comes in a way of pride. Then sometimes ego comes in a heavy self-pity. It's another way of playing God, you know. You feel so much self-pity that you draw so much attention to yourself. So now it's playing God another way, being so much in sort of self-pity. And Prabhupada was, you know, merciful and letting me understand that, yes, good intention is there. But do things in the right way, the right way, do the right thing in the right way. And so after that, I became a little less obnoxious in my services, etc. So it's one of my little stories. Now, some of you, if you like to share when you felt abandoned, any way that you like, but a particular point in your life that stands out. When really you start feeling forsaken by devotees, by everybody, and perhaps even by Krishna. But just to see that it really wasn't Krishna forsaking you, but it was an experience of growth. It was an experience that later gave you some insight, an experience that showed you that in fact that Krishna is there, an experience that after you got through that difficulty, you've become a better person, or you've learned how to use and imbibe what was came out of that particular growth. So I think we'll have to pass this mic around, probably. Who would like to share this story? I'd like to start off. Don't everybody raise their hand at the same time. Yes. Maybe you can just state your name and where you're serving.
My name is Ashoka. I come from Austria. And actually, I had many such experiences where I felt forgotten from Krishna. And then after going through this crisis, I could realize that it was His mercy. So that I can make some progress. And the incident I want to tell was actually when I still was a karmic, it was shortly before we came to Krishna consciousness. And I was pregnant with my son, and it was about 3 days where I was completely down. And I was just always in such situations, I was praying to God. And as a karmic, I had no idea who He was, how He was looking. I just said from my religion, the hands behind that comes out from the cloud of the burning bush. And then I was so frustrated and so down, and I cried out, oh God, I want to know who You are, where You live, what is Your name, what are You doing? And I was completely desperate. And shortly after this, I gave birth to my son, and then half a year later we became devotees. During the pregnancy, we already had some contact with devotees, but after half a year we then joined. About 1 year when we were devotees, I suddenly realized, I remember this incident, and then I realized that Krishna answered to me. He told me who He is, He told me His name, He told me where He lives, how He looks like, everything. And this was when I realized this. It was from 1 second to the other, I suddenly realized this. I could understand that He's always here, He's always caring, and He's always listening.
And as we discussed yesterday, that so many devotees,
when they, before they came to Krishna consciousness, they were at a very, very desperate point in their lives, where they were fasting, crying, praying, wondering where is God, begging the Lord somehow to help them, to assist them. And so this is a very common one that she's sharing. And because of that honest and genuine frustration and desire to know, then it pinpointed one's, it focused one's consciousness to the point that then our greater desire was really to know the Lord. You see, the Krishna is not responding to every single notion that we have, but the way our desires add up. So if our stronger desires are really to serve Him, then He will come through in such a way. Sometimes we have desire to serve, to know, but our sensual desires are stronger, and we keep finding that we get drawn, or things happen in our life space based on those sensual desires. But when our desires to know become very, very focused, then this really is like a blessing, because now we know Krishna is going to respond based on our genuine call. Someone else like to share one of the experiences where they felt that they perhaps were feeling they were abandoned, but found something different? Lakshmi. They were saying yesterday how often women experience depression more, and we're looking at some of the reasons for it. Hormonal reasons. We're looking at reasons that in material society is pretty, you see, macho. Women are often less in control of things, and so there's more tendency that they may experience some anxiety and depression. Also because they're more sensitive, and often because they are better, or they are able to communicate a little faster, a little more intense. So we notice that women, after a while, a few men will raise their hand also, I'm sure. Yes.
My name is Lakshmi Mani, and I'm involved with a school for teenage girls in Nashville, Florida. There's been many crises, of course, in the development of that school. We've been running that school now in some form or other, for about 27 years. And it's going through many metamorphoses.
If you don't mind, could you stand? Because in the back, they can hear it. See that also. Yes. We'll start with the presence.
Anyway, so I can't remember the year, but about 8 years ago, we were renting a property in Alaska where we had just moved there. And the facility was a house. It was on 2.5 acres of land. But the house was kind of small, and we were really cramped there, and the house needed a lot of repairs. And so we were thinking, we didn't know what to do, because we didn't have really a lot of money. If you've ever worked in Brooklyn, you know money isn't a thing that you have. And so the person that I worked with, Mother Akutu, she was starting to think maybe it was a no-go, and she was thinking maybe she would move somewhere else. And so it was kind of a tug of war, and she kept saying maybe I should leave, maybe the school should close, I'm not sure. And we were talking, and so finally I just said, listen, you go and do what you need to do for a month and just figure it out, you know, whether you're going to stay, whether you're going to go. And I was trying to figure out, what is it that Krishna wants? Does he want us to close the school? You know, because it had been going on for so long, and it was everything that we did, you know, we didn't do anything else. And so I decided, okay, well, I'm going to also go, and I'm going to just travel for the month that she does her thing, and then we'll see what happens. So I called up some friends of mine and found out that they were going to India. And so I arranged for myself to meet them in England and then go with them, traveling for a month. And we were just going to different places in India. And a whole time I was like praying again and again, Krishna, if you want something to go on with the school, you better let me know what it is real fast. Because it doesn't seem like things are going to go on a whole lot longer here. And so after, it was like 4 or 5 days just before we were supposed to come home, and still I didn't know anything. And I went to the appearance day of Radhakund, you know, that celebration they have at midnight there. And so we were there on the appearance day of Radhakund, and then I saw Akutu there. And so she came to me and she said, I decided I'm going to stay at the school. I'm not going to do other things that we were discussing. I said, well, that's one problem down, but where are we going to have the school? We can't stay in this situation. Guy won't sell the building. We don't have any money anyway. What are we going to do? So that evening I went home, and I was staying at Tosan Krishna's place in Vrindavan, and we were in the house. It was two ladies and myself. And I said to one of the ladies, I said, well, you know, I don't know what we're going to do. Now Akutu's decided to stay with the school, and we're going to keep working, but we don't have any money, and we need to get a place. And if I just had $68,000, you know, I could buy this place. Where am I going to get $68,000? And one of the women said, I'll give you
$68,000.
At first I thought she was just jacking around, you know?
Right.
And so I just said, yeah, right, okay. And then I went to sleep, and the next morning I got up and she said, you have to give me your bank account number, because we're flying back to England, you're going back to America, so I have to know where to transfer the money. And so, in reality, what she did was she gave us a $72,000 interest-free loan, and now we own 5 acres of land, and we have a really nice school, and it's completely paid for.
See, sometimes we have had these experiences, and we forget how Krishna's magic comes through. Just like in the early days, devotees used to do so much pioneering. And as we did more pioneering, we're literally more at the mercy of Krishna. And we found that many, many miracles were happening. Of course, we can say sometimes we were a little naive and inconsiderate in some ways. But basically, because the faith was there, the devotion was there, and the belief that Krishna was going to arrange something. So many temples just started off, a few devotees go out and they preach. They had really, really good intention in trying to help others. So as people heard the message, then it's on Krishna to facilitate. He said that he will carry what we lack and maintain what we have. So then he arranges for more facility. As the preaching effort is there, as the sincerity, as the bhakti lata bija is being nourished, then it produces certain things that aligns with the quality and the strength of the nourishment. Someone else can share? So we all have many, many times that we of seeing Krishna's loving hand involved in our lives, especially at times when there was some crossroads. Mm-hmm. Stand, please.
Should I say my name?
Mm-hmm. Your name and where you're from?
Hare Krishna. My name is Dr. Faz. I'm from London.
I was at university, first year studying medicine at Southampton University, and I ended up going into halls where I had to go into some residences, and it worked out that I ended up living with six other university students in one flat. And basically, there's no other devotees in Southampton, and it's about an hour and a half away from London. I was kind of just getting into Krishna consciousness, just kind of overcoming the four regulative principles. So during that time, I was suffering a lot in association with those people. It was like, hellish sounds going all night, 11 o'clock, people screaming outside my window, coming out from the pub, and meat in the fridge, blood dripping on my food in the fridge because we had to share a fridge, and all kinds of horrible smells and sounds the whole time. And doing a course that I wasn't sure if I'm going to do right or not, and just feeling not equipped, and going through that whole year not really taking advantage of association with devotees, not having realized the importance. But by the end of it, going through all the difficulties, by Krishna's grace, I ended up passing the exams that year. I came to the realization that if you just try and keep trying and keep some faith, keep trying, keep determined, that Krishna comes through in the end, even if you're materially limited. His love is more powerful than anything material, any limitation material. And also, from the whole experience with living with the karmis, I was realizing how important and how powerful devotee association, proper devotee association is. Hare Krishna.
Sri Sri Radha Gopinath Ji Ki. Someone else? Not so much. Yeah, not so much.
I want to hear a story really that you think, Krishna, where are you? Or what's happening?
As he's saying, we're particularly looking at those stories where you really are feeling Krishna, where are you? This one is some realization of trying to go on and with good association and Krishna helping give us some guidance and stimulation. I'm sure we could write a book on our stories. Please come on. Yeah. Just come a little closer to Prabhupada here.
I don't know if the story is exactly your description, but I was on Sankirtan as a brahmachari. I was on Sankirtan brahmachari, and we had to collect a lot of money. And I was very bad at it, so I always got chastised, and I became pretty depressed. And one day, I just drove to Radhades, and I went to Radha Gopinath, and said, okay, now Radha Gopinath, you have to give me the answer for all my problems. So I was chanting, but he wasn't giving me an answer. So after an hour of chanting, then I looked at Radha Gopinath, and I thought, well, he's very beautiful. And I looked again, and I thought, he's actually very beautiful. And I looked again and again, and he became more and more beautiful. And then I was saying, what is my problem? I could remember the problem was
wrong. Anyone else? Some wonderful realizations in mercy and perception? Yes, please. Take it back to us. Will it go that far? Oh, she has to come up. Okay. Maybe meet her halfway.
Before I come to Krishna, when I first met the devotees and I learned about the four regulative principles, I was thinking that this is something wonderful. And with most of them, I didn't have the problem. But there was one particular that I had problem. And that was something that I was really ashamed of. And I didn't even want to think about it. It was like something, like really put it in the corner, and I don't want to look at it. And I was thinking, okay, we have these wonderful rules. And it was said that if you chant the holy names, then it will be so easy, so natural to follow the rules. And for some time, I was really feeling like, oh, it is possible. Finally, I found the right path, and now it is possible. Now I can become normal, because I was so much ashamed of myself that I had a problem. So I was, so this was giving me the hope. But then after some time, it became difficult. And again, I had the same problem. And I was thinking, what should I do now? The process doesn't work, or what is going on? Because I'm chanting, and I'm trying to do what I'm supposed to do. But see, I live with my parents, so I can't do everything. I have to go to school. I have to associate with other people, and I can't have a regular morning program. I can't have all the facilities that other devotees living in the temple have. And at that point, I was really wondering what I should do, and if it's coming now again, so doesn't mean that the process doesn't work. Doesn't mean that maybe Krishna does like this, or how is it that maybe it's possible for some other people, but it's not possible for me. But then after some time, I figure out that okay, I have to go on with the process. I have to. Even if there is some kind of a fall down, and I still have to pick myself up and do it. But then the same pattern was because I didn't want to look at the problem. So Krishna was again and again showing me, but I didn't want to look at it. Because I was listening to classes, or the devotees were saying that tests will come. So at some point I was, as a very new devotee, it was even before I was initiated, I was praying to my Guru Maharaj's deity, Lakshmi Shingadev. And they have all kinds of weapons, all kinds of like spears and swords and whatever, bows and arrows. And I was praying to Lord Shingadev that he will do the operation on my heart, that he will take it out of me, all the problems that are blocking me on the path of Krishna consciousness. And I was also praying that if it becomes so painful that I will not forget him. But then after some time I forgot about these prayers. It was just when I was very new devotee, I was just praying really ardently to Lakshmi Shingadev for that. And then again, for many years I didn't want to look at the problem, even if it was surfacing every couple of months. I was like, I'm not going to look at it. Okay, forget about it. Okay, now I pick myself up. But I really didn't want to go deep into the problem. But still there was this uncertainty if I'm really able to follow the process, if Krishna is helping me, if he's really trying to help me or what is happening. And then after some time I was in a completely different situation. My ashram situation changed, and my situation where I lived changed. Everything changed in my life at some point. And then it became even more difficult, and then finally the problem was coming really like very, very vivid in front of my face, but still I didn't want to look at it. And then I was like, and at some point it became so much prominent in my life that I couldn't even chant, I couldn't follow the morning program, even though I had all the facilities. I mean, not all the facilities you have in the temple, that it is organized, but still I was living with devotees, and there was all the facilities to chant, to read Prabhupada's books, all the facilities to change around, all the facilities to have the morning program, but I couldn't follow because there was the problem, and it was like so much for me that that everything else I couldn't just do. I was like, Krishna is abandoning me really. And then, but then it started to come like in my dream that I was dreaming. And then I had dreams of my spiritual master who was telling me, write me a letter. But I didn't write. I couldn't because I was too much embarrassed. I couldn't get it out of myself to tell him what is really the problem. When the problem was coming, then I had the Maha Mantra in my head. And I was sharing it with my husband, and I was telling him, how is it I'm so fallen, I'm so... so depressed, I can't follow anything, I'm really like very low, but somehow there is this Maha Mantra, somehow there is the dreams and what's happening. And then because I was thinking, if these things happen, so it means that you must be something special. Because normally, in a normal situation, I didn't have dreams about Krishna, or didn't have dreams about spiritual master, or I couldn't hear the Maha Mantra inside of my mind. So I was thinking, so what is wrong? Is it that I'm not special because I can't follow anything, but somehow these thoughts are in the mind? And then then he was sharing with me that actually it's not that it's mercy. It's Krishna's mercy for me. Krishna is trying to pick myself up. And then at some point, I really, it became so too much for me that at some point I started crying. And I started crying and I said, what am I doing? Why I can't, I'm not following anything, and I have feeling like Krishna is showing his hand to me. My spiritual master is extending his hand in the dreams, and they are telling me, do something. I had the realization, if only I could grab to these ropes, I would be saved, but I couldn't. And then I started crying, and then at that point, when I started crying, I wanted really to pick myself up, and really I started to admit to myself what is the problem, and then I decided to really do something about the problem. And then I started to pray to Radha Madan Mohan. I started to pray that I didn't even know that the deities, they are somewhere, consciously I didn't know that the deities are somewhere here in Europe. And then I was thinking, I was praying to them, please attract me to you, because you are Madan Mohan, you are the attractor of the Cupid personified, you are attracting everybody. So please make me attracted to you, because if you don't give me the higher taste, I can't have it. I'm trying in so many years. I'm trying chanting, I'm trying reading, but I can't get the taste. So please give me. And at some point we moved to Aventoya, and then I stood in front of Radha Madan Mohan. And then even in Aventoya, it was difficult. It was still, the problem was coming again. And at some point, I stood in front of Radha Madan Mohan because I couldn't go to Mangala Arati. And I couldn't pick myself up. And I stood in front of the deities. I said, please help me. I can't do it. I'm trying. I know it's the best for me. I know that this will save me. I know that I have to chant in the morning. I would like to do it, because sometimes I had a glimpse that was so nice. I want to come from Mangala Arati. I want to serve you. But you have to help me. Otherwise, I can't do it. And then it started to unfold. And now I'm here rather than serving Radha Gopinath. And I can touch their feet. I can trust the deities. And that, like, Krishna was really showing me. And he's in many ways, when I look back, every time when I had the same problem, every time I had to immediately up something for the deities, or do something for devotees, especially for the deities. And every time I was feeling, I'm not qualified. I'm a horrible person, and now I have to touch you. How is it? And then I realized that Krishna was showing me, what do you want? Do you want Maya or Krishna? What do you want? It's exactly, he was showing me very clearly, here I am. I am the most beautiful. I can attract you if you want. You just surrender yourself.
Let me comment on this, because this is all the classical points are there. Okay, Hare Krishna. Sri Sri Radha Gopinatha Ji Ki. This is a very powerful story. All the classical points are there, where we find that we are overwhelmed. Our problem seems to be insurmountable. Kind of question the process, we question Krishna's mercy. But in fact, the mercy is there. Because there was this ongoing sincerity and desire to be free of a particular complexity in her life. So Krishna was constantly arranging to be able to facilitate her. And we mentioned how as we grow in devotional service, our desires come. All of our desires must ultimately come gross and subtle before us, before we can be able to transcend them. So there are times when we are trying to deal with an issue, and it just seems to get worse and worse. Especially new devotees, they notice that when they first come into Krishna consciousness, and they're trying to be serious, the more they try to be serious, the more they find that there are problems. And sometimes the problems seem even greater than the problems that they had in the secular world.
Because Krishna is saying, oh, yes, 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 you want to come then. Krishna arranges. Because she remained determined in spite of the fact that the difficulties were there. But she was gradually understanding the difficulties there, and I'm helpless, but at the same time, you are so strong. You can help. And so Krishna is bringing her in through the association of the deity, through the dreams, etc. This kind of sharing we're doing for particular reasons. And a lot of the seminars that I do, as I said, it's not just for the knowledge only. But there's certain things that you can do that can shed karmic patterns. Bhaktivinoda Kaur mentions about the power of sharing in community, the power of making vows in community. So just by her sharing that story, she's gotten internally stronger from that. Just as we have these experiences, we reflect on them, then we begin to relive and we begin to get energized by reflecting on how Krishna is there for us. And it can help us for the next challenges that we have. And as we hear these things, many of us have similar types of issues in our lives, and some maybe are struggling with certain problems that they haven't been able to conquer over yet. And as we hear others, how, yes, because sometimes we're feeling nobody is suffering like I'm suffering. Sometimes a devotee has a mantra that I am really suffering. And nobody knows how much, you know. You're in the class, your mind is a million miles away. Or you're in the Arctic, and the suffering is so intense, you're just looking at your watch, looking at the pujo, and you're thinking, what? He's just on the flower. He should have been finished a long time ago. I mean, just little things, just basic things. You know? This is just whatever is there in our devotional life just becomes a source of agitation, you know, for you. Because the mind is just so disturbed. You know, it's literally like you're being choked. Sometimes it's due to offenses and we're literally feeling choked. But other times it's a growth. And through that growth, things are coming up. And as they come up, it can be very, very challenging. So now she could have decided, I've tried once or twice. It didn't happen. I didn't become free of such. I'm out of here. I'll go worship Lord Shiva. Or maybe Ganesh. I hear that he gives boons pretty fast also. But no, instead, the cry was stronger. More experiences were happening. Greater appreciation of the deities, of Guru, and of the association of Vaishnavas. Maybe we can have just one or two more. Please. We can pass it back. Just try to summarize it a little shorter so we can get a few more in. But it's a lovely story, and we're really glad that she shared it.
Hare Krishna, I'm Naina Manjari, and I was serving in Dole. So, I have a few stories, and I like to make them short, to resume them a little bit. So, before joining, I had a boyfriend who was big.
Well, why don't you share two of the main ones, two of those that are most important to you, if you share.
Okay. So I had big love story, and after a few months, my boyfriend just left without any reason, and I got in heavy, heavy depression. I thought I would get crazy, no? And I just thinking, okay, if I go on like this, I just madness is coming, no? So I was thinking it must be something else, no? And I was expecting so much from this person. I was expecting that he would take me to travel and to show me everything, no? So I said, okay, this person did not bring me to travel, so I could pick myself together, no? So I went to the travel agency. I say, okay, I want to go to travel, no? 1 month. So I want sun, I want this, I want that. So okay, you can go to Thailand, you can go here, you can go there. I say, what about India? I say, oh, India, you don't speak English, you are a fat woman alone, you never travel in your life, it will be difficult. I say, yeah, but I want to go there. I say, okay, but North India. I say, okay, India is India. So I went to India, and then I start to develop really a taste to look for truth. No? And later I met a spiritual movement, and later I met the devotees by praying, like you said before. So I could see that by this heavy, really broken, like breaking my heart, no? I was able to go higher and to find a spiritual life.
That heartbreak was a catalyst to then make you more inquisitive about trying to find alternatives. Mm-hmm.
I have also two, but anyway, I can share only one. It's in Sankirtan stories. So I was distributing books in Switzerland, and I was very bad. So it was one morning, very, very cold, with like clouds, you know, very heavy weather. One Monday morning, I was not inspired to go out, and I was going door to door. So from the morning till 12 o'clock, I sold one book. And the guy, he just wanted to give me one, he gave me 5 francs donation. And I said, okay, but maybe you can take this book, no? And I give a Krishna book, and he said, okay, it's some pictures inside, I can give it to my little daughter. It was the only book I distributed that morning. And then it was almost the break, and I saw some fewer buildings. I said, okay, before the break, I tried that, but anyway, it's no hope, no? And then I ran to one door, and I showed the book to the lady, and she said, oh, sorry, but I have so many eyes problem, I'm almost blind, I cannot read. So only nice lady from the morning. And then we spoke a little bit, and she said, anyway, you are nice, and okay, I took two books, I can give to my friends because I read them already. And then I said, okay, the price is like this, if you give money for my Indian trip. And then she gave more money, and then I gave more books, and she gave more money, and it was a competition. I was trying in the set now. You should come back this afternoon, I have to go to the bank. and she gave more 100 francs, and I said, ah, but I have more books, and I bring the set, you know, the set. And then she gave more 50 francs, and I said, but I have no French books anymore. And then she asked, you speak Italian? And then she said, yeah, okay. And then I... and she was almost blind. I mean, and I was after helping her to put all the books on the shelves. And... so, yeah, I mean, it was very tough time in the morning. I almost died, but I could see after that it was really, really Krishna's mercy. It was really transcendental.
Sisi Radha Gopinatha Jiki. So maybe we have a story by one of the men. Okay. I can pass it over.
Another Sankirtan story from one.
I'll take the mic so that we can be able to hear. But a story of abandonment, or where you see special mercy out of frustration.
Yeah, there's. I remember another Sankirtan story which happened to Bhakti Brian, who's not here present. But he had a tough day and he didn't distribute anything all day. So they were going with another devotee back to the Sankirtan base, and this devotee was a little heavy on his case. He said, what is this? He didn't do anything, and like that. And suddenly Brian, you know, he got some hope. And they passed by one Surinamese store. There was an Indian from Suriname running it. And, Brian disappeared there, and after, I mean, long time came out. He said, how many Krishna books do we have? So then they went to the base, and they had 200 Krishna books. So he took all the books there to the store and sold them all to this man, 200 Krishna books.
A wholesaler, wow. One last short story of someone's life. Okay, this pass up here to this brahmachari and then we'll stop. We all look at our lives, and we'll find many, many, many experiences. Krishna, the problem is not Krishna coming forth, but it's our ability to say yes to Krishna. Krishna is constantly arranging and assisting.
Hi Krishna, my name is Thomas, Dr. Thomas from Amsterdam Temple. And as some of you might know, sometimes the temple there is a bit of a steam pressure, quite difficult to survive. And I had also one time that I was because I had some negative thoughts about some devotees, then I came to the point that I decided that I leave the temple. So I'd made a plan, I was thinking, I leave a note and I take my bike and I put all my things on it, what I need, and I go to my brother. But then I was thinking, I had made up my mind to do that, but I was thinking it's not completely honest towards Prabhupada, because I had a few dreams about him, and I just knew that he was very much concerned with all the devotees. So then I was just thinking, well, I just, for Prabhupada one more time, I just go out and distribute some books. So, but the next day, I was, all day I was, I was actually busy. So I couldn't, there was no chance to go out. But in the afternoon, actually, there was a little half an hour time or three quarters of an hour left to do some sankirtan. So I went out and distributed like a few books, maybe like five books or something. And that was actually strong enough everything was dissipated, everything was solved. So then you could really see that this book distribution is really so strong and it pleases Prabhupada so much. So then immediately you were completely, from the mental platform again on the, rise.
God, see, Radha Gopinath Jiki. We have a Sankirtan seminar. But it's wonderful because one of the things we do see is that when we're trying to preach, we often experience more of Krishna's presence and Krishna's magic. So it wasn't really out of line that we wound up with a few Sankirtan stories also. But it's interesting to see that when we sometimes think less of ourselves, we try to serve, not that we deny our identity, but we think less of ourselves. What's the word? We shouldn't think less. We think of ourselves less, think less of ourselves. But the point is that as we focus in trying to serve and help someone else, then Krishna will often find ways to take away some of our own problems. We're to take risks, but conscientious risks, not to be foolish. When we involve ourselves in devotional service, we're literally declaring war on Maya. And so war means that there's adversarial attacks. War means people become casualties and some become wounded. And so we see all of these things happening. And a warrior must be careful to not to be insensitive, but at the same time not to become a casualty in the process. Everyone who takes a devotional service is literally declaring war. We are all engaged in our battle of Kurukshetra. Just as Arjuna was having these tremendous challenges, he had an awesome task to perform. Krishna was there. Krishna didn't tell him, just go sit on Arjuna and I'll do it for you. Krishna didn't say, well, just watch me, I'm going to show you. But he explained what was necessary, but Arjuna had to do. So there are times when we kind of forget what we are a part of, that this Bhagavad Gita is Arjuna, who is an eternally liberated entity, who really doesn't have to be informed of anything or to have to experience much in this material world, of course. But he comes as part of Krishna's paraphernalia, Krishna's pastimes, not of his leela. And he is covered over just so he can ask certain questions and perform in such a way for the benefit of everyone. It is quite phenomenal that our major book is a discussion on a battlefield. It's not in a, in the Himalayas, it's not in a palace, but it's on a battlefield. There is no environment more threatening, more challenging than being on a battlefield. There's no environment where there is the constant consideration of life and death, where people are trying to, entities are positioning themselves in such a way. So it's interesting that our most basic book is such discussions on the battlefield. So it's there to remind us, when we come to Krishna consciousness, it literally means all hell breaks loose. See, in religiosity, main consideration is how to connect with God to have certain things removed from one's, certain obstacles removed from one's sense gratification. And so the idea is, dear God, give us our daily bread, and we pray for uncle, brother, sister, cousin, nephew, niece, grandmother, grandfather, great-grandfather, etc. If you approach most people as they're doing their prayers, there's a lot, they're this, they're that. That basically it is for removal of certain material obstacles, rather than the idea of coming for ultimate service and love. So there's a difference between religiosity and transcendence, or spirituality. And the transcendental platform means literally you transcend. It means that there are so many things from this life and previous lifetimes that we have said yes to. And now we are to say no to such and say yes, yes to Krishna. So many of these experiences and challenges is Krishna really helping us to do the last things, to deal with the gross and the subtle things, that all of our desires come before us, where we have no, we have nothing that we want to come back here for that's so important. And by that, then it means we're really gaining our right to go back to Godhead, because we are not really holding on to anything of a nature, such a nature, that we have to come back to experience, we have to come back to involve ourselves in such. And so this is so much the process of transcendence. Okay, for just 5 minutes, and then we'll take a few minutes for questions. Go to your sheets real quick. Number nine says, sense of failure and disappointment with oneself and one's institution. We understand how this can put one in a very depressed and disappointed state. Often we do two things, one extreme or the other. Sometimes people feel that there's no need for institutions and they just want to do whatever they want to do, yatta mata tata pata, they're engaged in practically anarchy. And so we can never really grow without sadhu sangha, without association. But other times we take the other extreme, where we begin to deal with the externals as if the external is the whole internal aspect, or as the external is the internal. Or sometimes the institution takes on such a mood that we get so much into productivity, so much into structure, so much into ritual, we begin to forget what the ritual and what the achievements are really about. Or we begin to deal so much with the many, that we start minimizing and forgetting the one. Institutions have this tendency of sometimes institutionalizing various theology, that it becomes so structured that it becomes hard to find what is the real essence of this. And that can become very dangerous. So people who are too much thinking that they can hide behind institution, then when institution from time to time is not so strong, it doesn't matter what institution it is. See, somehow we had often felt that every other institution that's ever existed sometimes goes through problems, sometimes fragmentations, regrouping, adjustments, but somehow it's not going to happen to us in the Hare Krishna movement. When in fact our own heritage has shown us that constantly throughout Vaishnavism, there have been tremendous challenges. That even in the time of Bhakti Siddhanta, there were so many fragmentations, people were even literally murdering each other. Bhakti Vinod's time, etc. So a lot of times very extensive confusion is there, but this is also Maya's way of trying to intervene, to weed out, to clarify, and to empower those who are still, as this young lady was, who are still trying to go on in such ways. So again, same thing that can devastate us, put us in a great state of depression. We can see it as an adventure. We can see it as an opportunity, a chance to connect with Krishna even more. When we are cheated by God's representative, under number one, this is very heavy, because it's one thing to be cheated by secular or material personalities. When we're cheated by the God-man or the God-woman, then this often causes us to lose faith in the Godhead. And, of course, this is the greatest abuse, because it causes people to become atheistic sometimes, or it's like killer of the soul. Disappointment with marriage, disappointment with children. We're mentioning how depression and mental illness is rising. People are so disturbed with their political leaders, religious leaders, their husband, their wives, their children, with themselves, and they find it difficult in just trying to do basic things from day to day. In America, in some of the public schools, now up to 25% of the kids are on drugs, taking, what is it called, Ritalin. They're doing recess time, kids line up, and they get these pills, because they're hyper, they're attention deficit, so many different things. And it has a lot to do, of course, with the environment, and also a lot to do with lack of love, lack of caring, lack of nurturing. We're producing all of these kinds of children with certain types of mentality, things that are seen on video, on television, etc. We move real quick. Number 11, need for a devotee therapist. I was just sending a message 2 days ago before I came here to all the GBC and temple presidents, just emphasizing that as we're having this rise in our society as well as in the secular world, of people who are having mental challenges, that there is a need for devotees to step forth and try to help ourselves as well as to help others. And as we have people in our own communities having these challenges, we just send them to karmic therapists. Often their problem gets reinforced and even sometimes becomes worse because they do not understand our Siddhanta, and it becomes very confusing many times for people who have to have these experiences. And if we just ignore it, then there's also going to be an issue. And we're having this problem now with devotees in general, and even with our leadership, as devotees are dealing with so many issues, so many problems, so much stress, so much anxiety, and previous patterns that were there coming forward. This is what we were talking yesterday, how women, especially in their late 40s, that many times when there is some abuse in the earlier parts of their life, it comes again very dominant around that particular time. And one may not quite understand why they're going through certain changes, and it can be because of these things that have been somewhat repressed. Or as men are near their late 40s or 50s, they're very happy that the children are going off to school, married, at the universities. For women, it can be one of the most depressing times, because it's like they've done their part, and now what about them? Or they've done their part, and now they are feeling some alienation, some abandonment, etc. The number 13, you jump fast, six enemies of the mind, we understand this. There's one other thing that I didn't mention, I'll throw in real quick, because some of you probably experience this often and do not know why. There's also what is considered like a seasonal depression. As we're here living in the climate where it gets rather cold and snows, and sometimes the sun is not so prominent, some of you may notice that you find yourself getting more depressed during that time of the year. Well, this happens to many, many, millions and millions of people. And sometimes it's happening also in where you're living. The body needs a certain amount of light. And there are some people who are having certain states of depression, and they just change the lighting in their house. Or they change their location. They're living in the basement. They're living in places where they're not getting much sunlight or artificial light. And this has a way of affecting the physiognomy, which affects the consciousness. So we may want to take that a little more serious, to be able to, what is that? To be able to get light. Anyway, some magic someone has. last few things. Selfishness, not able to forgive. Not tomorrow, but the day afterwards. We're going to do a workshop, and we'll find some way how to get into various groupings. But we want to explore forgiveness, because sometimes one of the issues that has... What was that? Okay. One of the things that... We have to wrap up because our time is going. That affects so many people is that they hold grudges, and they're not able to let things go. And this is very serious of how it affects the conscience, and it's very unfortunate for Vaishnavas. Vaishnavas, our basic concern is when someone has done something wrong, they are to be dealt with according to the degree of the crime or the problem, but then they're to be forgiven. Forgiven after chastisement, after acknowledgement, etc. We do not hold grudges. We're not even to be our enemy's enemy. But when devotees are holding grudges, even, say, amongst ourselves, or from some things from the past, this establishes very unhealthy patterns in the consciousness, and also has a way of attacking the cells and creating various types of diseases. So we will do some interactive things in looking at forgiveness and trying to let some issues go. Lack of faith, we discussed that a little bit. Not being mindful, lack of gratitude is a way of life. And we'll end with one or two of these points. There are times when, as we have greater faith and we're ready to be used more by Krishna, if we can just get in the mood of thanking Krishna, when we're able to thank Krishna more genuinely, then the next opportunity presents itself, the next growth experience. If we have no money, we thank Krishna, and we try to use whatever we have to the best that we can. Krishna gives us a lot of money. We thank Krishna. Krishna, you're so kind that you've given me this so I can give it back to you. If we have very bad health, We thank Krishna. Krishna, I'm sick now. You allow me to be more contemplative, reflective. You allow me to look a little closer at my life. Krishna gives us very good health. Thank you, Krishna. You give me a good, strong body so I can be able to use it in such ways. When Krishna makes us famous, oh, thank you, Krishna. You know that I'm so weak that I need to be stroked in so many ways. My ego needs to be inflated, so you're helping me in so many ways. When somehow we are infamous, thank you, Krishna. You are humbling me, allowing me to be able to remain balanced so that I will not get deterred. As we literally try to analyze everything that's happening in our life, try to see how to glorify the Lord, and then look close at what is the experience, that what are we to learn from such, then we'll constantly be growing. What will happen is that the negative things will turn into something positive, and the positive things will become more positive. We grow much more, not when things are going nice. We're not tapashis or yogis, we're not masochists or sadists, but because we are prisoners. And so our basic state is that we're trying to get out. So when we're just kind of moving with the basic patterns of the world, of the planet, of society, it's not a sign that we're really launching ahead. But when we start launching ahead, Maya works overtime in trying to bring in obstacles. Many of you notice, sometimes you're doing festivals or something, or some of you notice who are organizing this program. Before it starts, there's challenges. Sometimes right afterwards, there's challenges. Any chance, time, there's a big chance to preach, big chance to serve, then there's always Maya trying to come forth to interfere. And so we try to plan around that, and then there'll be growth, etc. So when we are just kind of going from day to day and things are happening nice, we should be a little nervous. Not that we, again, look for some issues, but when issues come, we realize, oh, here's my chance to grow. Here's my chance to cry out more. Here's my chance to become more destitute and to place it at the lotus feet of the Lord. And when we do that, then we'll see changes. In our own lives, we can all see different times when we had serious challenges and our minds gave us all kind of reasons why we should give up, why we should stop, why we should go and do something else. But we didn't. And because we didn't, even though the senses and the mind were saying we should, we noticed a distinct change in our consciousness, a distinct period of growth. Take the converse of that. You can see times when there was some challenge and you really didn't maintain faith, became so weak and disturbed, and you can see, you get into a rut. So it's those times when we are really feeling sometimes so lonely, abandoned, and everyone not only is to go, but must go. Arjun, he had to go through this for us, showing us. But then in the back of our minds, we're reminded that Krishna is there, and we remain faithful. Then we'll see that amazing things happen. So I'm going to end with this, and then tomorrow I'll open up with questions before we do the evaluation of the mind. And one short story. In our line, Srila Sridhar Maharaj, not the present one, but in our ancient line, once explains about the verse in the Nectar of Devotion, Dayabak, where it talks about that one may be suffering now due to so many things from the past, karma, but one should go on with faith and dedication, knowing that it becomes a person's rightful claim to inherit the kingdom of God. So as he gives commentary on this, he brings forth the question, how does a son inherit his father's wealth? The father has put out the will and has given things over to the son. So how does the son inherit? Just has to stay alive. All he has to do is stay alive. Everything is already there. It's been documented that the son is to be the receiver. And so all the son has to do is stay alive. Father dies, and he gets the bounty, gets the wealth. So in many cases, this is what we have to do. We just have to stay alive. Because as we are following the principles, we are connected with the parampara, and the Lord Chaitanya, particularly in this age, Lord Nityananda knows how difficult it is for one to be able to attain God consciousness. So therefore, we are much more under the category of kripa siddha, potential for kripa siddha. One goes back sadhana siddha, nitya siddha. We're more under that category. So we just have to, in spite of all the kind of things that happens to us individually, to our families, to the institution, we have to remain having faith in Krishna and realizing that this is a cleansing process, that as we grow and as we remain faithful, then Krishna will send us whatever is necessary for us to transcend as a way that He's calling us back a lot faster. So as you leave, just think the next day though. Think more about in your own life some of those times that you did feel abandoned, but how Krishna came through. And remind yourself the same Krishna who came through for you in many other instances is still there. Same Krishna who brought you to the movement when you were extremely frustrated, in some cases were committing, even thinking of committing suicide, at your lowest ebb, came forth. Not a different Krishna. That same Krishna is there to help us to the next stages and to bring us in. And as we can help each other to be reminded by that, by good association, we'll all move faster. It becomes our rightful claim. Hare Krishna. It's confounded, Chala Siddha Prabhupada ki.
I have my new book, Spiritual Warriors.
Hey Krishna. Siddha Prabhupada ki. So we didn't chase everyone away yet. Most of you are still here. So today we wanted to discuss some things about different states of consciousness. We wanted to look at what happens at each state. What happens when there's not enough attention or focus or alignment with a certain state of consciousness? What happens when there is too much? But first we want to look at some offerings that Rupa Goswami has given us in Vishwanath Chakravarti. Just as we see how important it is, utsaha, enthusiasm. Enthusiasm is so important in our devotional service that when we find ourselves not feeling enthused, an alarm should go off. Just like a fire engine or your alarm clock, which means there's a signal that either you wake up from the alarm clock when it goes off, or the fire engine or the police siren or something. It's a signal. Get out the way, an emergency, something important is happening, some sort of devastation or emergency is there. Because when we are enthused, we find that so many auspicious things seem to happen and develop and extend themselves in our devotional service. And the converse of that is when we're not enthused, what happens? We're not enthused, all of the propensities, bodily propensities, are more demanding. When we're not enthused, we find that we are more prone to sleep more, eat more, we're more sexually agitated, etc. So it becomes quite difficult in trying to access a deep sadhana and to try to penetrate through the modes of material nature. So one of the ways, you know, Maya has many coverings. We know that she has this amazing way of just trying to take the living entities who are trying to pursue God consciousness away from the royal path of Bhakti Ras. And so some of Maya's coverings is for deterrence, and some is literally to create confusion and ambiguity. Maya often tries just to make everyone hate God. When you think about the most, you know, grossest aspect of materialistic consciousness, is people are atheistic or they're demonic, where they literally themselves do not want to be involved in any kind of spiritual pursuits, and they try to stop others. And when people are engaged, they do whatever they can to assault such people. And if Maya can't just kind of keep people in that level, then the next thing is, you know, maybe honor something religious, but just do it impersonally or from a voidistic perspective. Don't recognize where it's really coming from. Don't really accept that there's a summum bonum. But somehow if people do try to involve themselves in something and they're trying to recognize that there is a supreme Godhead, then the tendency is, okay, if you're going to do this, but just don't really take it so serious. And we see many people, they get stuck in some of these patterns. But another, perhaps even more dangerous aspect of Maya for aspiring spiritualists and transcendentalists is Maya sometimes tries to get us so disturbed, depressed about things that then we lose our enthusiasm, our ability to do what we can. And we always have to remind ourselves that every single person is important. Everyone has tremendous power. Everyone is tremendously observed and studied by Krishna's agents and is there to be helped by Krishna. It's like the example of Dhruva Maharaj. By just controlling the prana within his own body, he was influencing the prana throughout the whole cosmos. So we're all so much related to the general atmosphere, the collective scheme of things. Because the conscious, general consciousness of a temple or a zone or a continent or a planet is based on the aggregate of individual consciousness. And so things get really, really degraded when gradually people begin to tune in to lower consciousness. When it becomes a fad, it becomes a pattern. We analyze the difference between Sattva Yuga, Treta, Dwapara, and Kali Yuga. One of the most significant things that we see is that it's really the fall of the saintly class. We see how Kali Yuga becomes very pronounced due to fallen Brahmins, Brahmins' curse. It's particularly when the Brahminical class are no longer able to live and to support and to represent the Siddhanta. Then everything goes well. When those who are in the know are maintaining and living it, then civilization is prosperous from a spiritual devotional perspective. And this is not only just, you know, in our own Vaishnava line. It's that the fall of civilization is that those who are the caretakers of the theology become impotent or weak or deviant. And when this happens, they start changing the theology. They start finding many ways to rationalize all kinds of things because first they're not living it, and second, if they really supported it, people would see that there's something wrong with them. So in essence, whenever there is a problem, it always goes back to a certain source. It goes back to ourselves, leadership problem. Because basically people mainly follow certain patterns that are established by hierarchy. And so we can understand that problems increase is a sign of Kali coming in. It's a sign that we can take advantage and we can grow, as we were saying, we can use it for growth and maturation. But it's also a problem that there is weakness in leadership. This cannot be denied. This is our philosophy. As leadership is stronger, not only does it eradicate such problems judiciously, but it also stops so many intrusions from Maya from coming in. And often an alarm is there when we're finding that there's a lack of enthusiasm. Now, enthusiasm is not something that is to be faked. The root comes from a Greek word that means God within, or two words emphasizing within, expressions from within, manifestation, really related to divinity. But just like you can't really fake strong faith, you can pretend for a while. Our faith becomes naturally strong when our past, see, if our past has been somewhat rocky, incoherent, then if our present is also not so secure, how are we going to have strong faith about the future? Because future is looking at the possibilities and probabilities based on certain already established realities. The future is quite an extension of the present. And so it becomes very hard for people to have faith about what is to happen in the future if there is certain problems in the present that the past has been somewhat rocky. But if we are void of strong faith, we will have tremendous trouble in accelerating in our spiritual life. Because without intensity, one cannot break out of the modes of material nature. As the general current, say, is going down, you take a river or a wind, and it's going against you. So if you are just relaxed, at ease, or just so-called normal, then you get swift, you get pushed away with the flow of the current. And so if one's faith is not strong, one is not intense in their devotion, then there's likelihood that such person will get gradually carried by the current. And in Kali Yuga, the current becomes more and more the mode of ignorance. Some passion, but mostly ignorance. So we want to access strong faith, but genuine faith, by processing what the scripture has given us, what bona fide sadhus represent, and of course our connection with Guru. So, before we look at these states of consciousness, I just want to share real briefly some points from Vishwanath Chakravarti, from Madhurya Dambini on things that cause unsteadiness with our bhajan, with the bhajan kriya. And so these are ways that we look at what are some of the stagnations that causes one to not have steady enthusiasm. What are some of the expressions? First, he presents utsahamayi, that the aspirant devotee often has this kind of flair of enthusiasm. It comes and it's high, but it's like sudden, sort of like a rush. And we see that often in our neophyte stage. Krishna gives us some nice taste in different ways. And we long for that, and it may not always come so easily, but some his thing is there to encourage us. Then he mentions what's called Gana Tarala. Sometimes, which is what we normally find ourselves experiencing, sometimes enthusiastic, sometimes lethargic. And hopefully we are more finding enthusiasm than the lethargy. And then he explains when doubts are more dominant. This is called Vyudha Vakalpa. That means that one is believing certain things, having some faith, but the doubts are even stronger. We see this happening to devotees all around the world. The faith is getting weak, doubts are getting stronger. And a lot of it has to do with just general problems within their own life, within the society, within the communities, etc. Faith becomes strong when good things are happening around us. One's faith naturally becomes stronger. When positive, reinforcing things are happening, when success is going on, productivity, when good things are happening, then of course one's faith becomes naturally strong. It's a rare person who is able to have strong faith in spite of whatever is happening. That's rare. In most cases, we are highly influenced based on our socialization, what's happening with our sadhu sangha. So in the third case, Vishwanath Chakravarti explains that literally the doubts are even stronger than one's beliefs. For he describes this as Vishaya Sangara. Now doubts, however, have minimized or practically gone. But still, the disturbance is that there's a tug of war with one's sensual pursuits. That even though intellectually a person understands what is proper, one is able to have a certain amount of strong faith, doubts are weaker than one's beliefs and acceptance, what one is accepting, but the senses are pulling. The person gets pulled in because of the sensual, the vagas. Five, he explains what he refers to as niyama shama. Once one is practicing regularly, but he has no higher taste. This is a very difficult one. Because in material society, we're used to a quick fix. We're used to doing something, getting an immediate result. And see, modernity puts us more and more in that mindset. Especially we're in a tech society now, so people are trying to constantly get something, enjoy, experience something. So the tendency then is to kind of think that now we are in devotional service, and it's supposed to happen overnight. Yes, it is possible that advancement can be rather fast. But, you know, we've been many, many lifetimes doing inimical things. And even in this life, say if we have to struggle for the rest of our life. Just think about that. If we have to struggle for the rest of our life, it's not really such a serious issue. Because for the majority of people in this room, their lives are already 50, 75% over. Most of our lives are already, if we live a normal life, most of the countries we're from, the average lifespan is like about 70 or so, or plus. And so the majority of people in the room, most of our life is already gone. So even if we have to struggle the rest of our life, we have to endure a little bit to maintain perseverance, then what we can ultimately acquire, it's worth it. But Maya plays these funny games. Maya plays these games where Maya wants living entity to think, ah, you've been trying, just give up. It's like you've been depositing in your bank account. And while you're depositing, you don't feel necessarily much difference because the money has been deposited. And just like sometimes people in some of the bodies from Switzerland, sometimes people in other parts of the world, in a what do you call it, devious way, they put money in, from their countries into the Swiss bank accounts or whatever. And so sometimes they die and the money just goes to Switzerland. So Maya, when seeing especially that somebody is thinking or about to withdraw, tries to find some reasons to get that person to not to be able to draw off their funds. First by trying to take them out of the devotional process, perhaps. Or making them think that, hey, it's not working, it's not happening, so just give up. With the idea that now Maya is able to bring one back into her grips. This is why we're explaining about that one type of depression that is really a part of accelerating. And so when one is in that state, one has paid so much, put so many deposits in their bank account. They've chanted the holy name so many times. They've had darshan so many times. They've watered Tulsi. They have done, they've shared so many books. They've made so many devotees. They've preached so many to so many people. All deposits in our eternal bank account. So Maya would like one to think, nothing's happening. Just look at yourself. You've been chanting Hare Krishna for 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, 30 years. And you have no money. You have no mystic power. And you have some of the same desires that you had the first day you walked into the Hare Krishna temple. So why don't you go and worship Shiva? Om Namo Shivaya. Maya would like one to not to withdraw off what is there. And that can happen when we lose our enthusiasm. We start forgetting that we got all this wealth. Because it has not quite manifested yet. Vishwanath Chakravarti is saying one could be at a point where the doubts were at first were not so strong, sense control was there, and they were following, but still they do not have such a higher taste yet. So there's sometimes this integral period where we're doing the right thing, but we haven't experienced so much higher stimulation, realization, and so we begin to now start thinking that maybe this isn't working, or maybe we should do something else. As we look around us and we see so many also issues, that we may feel, well, perhaps this is the thing to do. Let me jump ship, jump away before the whole ship crashes. Some people are thinking like that these days. Let me jump ship, go back to school, do this thing. Let me contact my parents and let them know, I'm leaving this movement. You mentioned before you were giving me so many million thousands of dollars. Okay, if I leave. Is that offer still available? And so one is about to draw off their assets. But now Maya has convinced the person that you shouldn't. And because we're used to the quick fix, then during that time that we're about to draw off and receive, sometimes there's a period where people lose it. Temporarily, because later in the life, or in most cases the next lifetime, those assets are there, and they pick off from those assets. But who wants to wait, you know, so many more lifetimes? We know it gets worse, not easier. Material culture deteriorates. His last category, get older now, you bifocus. Last category is called Taranga Rangia, attachment or distraction by wealth, adoration, or distinction. So this is a case, again, a rather difficult situation, where there is success, but the success is acquired without humility. And so after one sometimes have gotten so far, and then they start claiming proprietorship for what is going on, getting distracted by the fame and adoration that comes, and so they were almost away from Maya. Maya finds a way just to bring them back in. So these will be distractions to one's bhajan that will cause us to miss the chance to accelerate, and has a lot to do when we find ourselves not feeling enthused. That should be the first alarm that we should, you know, look close to see what is going on. I'm not enthused. Is it because I'm making offenses? Is it because there are weeds that are not getting taken out? I'm not enthused. Is it because the kind of association that I'm having is really draining? It's not uplifting? I'm not enthused because I'm doubting the Shastra? I'm not enthused because I'm doubting Krishna's care? Or I'm not enthused and I'm depressed because I'm not living a life of gratitude? We mentioned yesterday about the importance of gratitude. It's really important. When we honor and use to our best whatever Krishna has given us, organically there will always be more coming. But when we do not use properly, and we do not have proper gratitude, then of course we'll start losing what we have. So one of the things to take away from this course, as we look at all the complexities of the mind, we see how depression is really connected with the mode of ignorance, and why it's so important for Vaishnavas to rise above ignorance and passion. Otherwise, it's, Prabhupada said in Hawaii, it's like a joke. It's like a person to get a law degree, they have to go to university and to get a certificate, graduate, etc. Prabhupada says, so similarly, one must come from the mode of goodness to be able to reach transcendence. We want to take that with us about gratitude. If we can just use more of the mind and focusing on such, then it will have its way of stimulating the body and the consciousness, and it will draw more success.